The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. There was a scholar of the law who stood up to test Jesus and said, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" He said in reply, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." He replied to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." But because he wished to justify himself, he said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man fell victim to robbers as he went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. They stripped and beat him and went off, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down that road, but when he saw him, he passed by on the opposite side. Likewise, a Levite came to the place, and when he saw him, he passed by on the opposite side. But a Samaritan traveler who came upon him was moved with compassion at the sight. He approached the victim, poured oil and wine over his wounds, and bandaged them. Then he lifted him up on his own animal, took him to an inn, and cared for him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper with the instruction, 'Take care of him, and if you spend more than what I have given you, I shall repay you on my way back.' Which of these 3, in your opinion, was neighbor to the robber's victim?" They answered, "The one who treated him with mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." The Gospel of the Lord. Let me start you out this evening with a story, okay? Here's the true story of a police officer with the NYPD. His name was Larry DiPrimo. And he tells this story about how one night he was walking the beat in Times Square. And he says it was a bitterly, bitterly cold winter's night. The kind of night that's so cold that it's dangerous. You don't even want to have your skin exposed to the open night air. The kind of night where you can feel the cold in the marrow of your bones. He says he was wearing 2 pairs of socks that night underneath his boots, and he still couldn't feel his toes. He's walking along that night, and suddenly he comes across a poor homeless man sitting there on the corner. Everybody's ignoring the homeless man. They're walking around him, they're stepping over him. He might as well have been a garbage can knocked over. But that wasn't what caught his attention that night. What caught his attention was the fact that the poor man was barefoot. No shoes, no socks, in night air, that cold. And he thought to himself, I've got to do something for this guy. He couldn't stand the sight of it. He said, if that guy doesn't have frostbite already, he's definitely going to have it by the morning. So he walks down the side street. He manages to find a shoe store. Approaches the sales clerk and says, "Give me the warmest pair of boots you have for sale. I don't care what's the cost." And he pays for the boots on his own nickel. Puts the boots on the man's feet himself. Walks away, not a word is said. And he figures that's the last he's ever going to hear of it. Well, it turns out there was a tourist there that night in Times Square. Recorded the whole thing on his mobile device, posted it on social media. Within a week, it had all gone viral. 400,000 likes, 200,000 shares on Facebook. Comment section, they said this is a modern day Good Samaritan. Why such praise? Why such attention? Probably because it doesn't fit the ordinary narrative that you'd expect with the police and the homeless, no confrontation, no conflict, no aggression, no arrest. Just one man helping his fellow man in a time of need without the slightest hope of any recognition or reward. And of course, the reason why I tell you that story this evening is because we just heard the second greatest parable Jesus ever tells, the parable of the Good Samaritan. And you say, second greatest parable Jesus ever tells? Well, what's the greatest parable Jesus ever tells? And that's the prodigal son. You can hear that one later in the year. But this is one of the most magnificent testimonies of mercy in the whole Bible. The whole thing's relevant to us right now because the question that launched this parable, the same question that's in all of your minds as you hear this parable read. This parable was launched because a scholar of the law approached Jesus and said, "Who's my neighbor?" In other words, who am I supposed to help? And be specific about it. Now, back in the book of Leviticus was written the great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And y'all thought that was a quote from Jesus. No, that one comes from Moses. And it's from the Old Testament. But the trouble is, nobody knew what it meant because nobody knew who their neighbor was. You see, in Leviticus, the word neighbor shows up 2 times. First time the word neighbor shows up, it says that your neighbor is your fellow Israelite. Well, that was easy to love. Love your comrade, love your countryman, love your compatriot in arms. Easy, anybody can do that. Trouble is the second time the word neighbor shows up in the book of Leviticus, it says that your neighbor is anybody who happens to be passing through the land of Israel. Friend, foe, or incognito. And so the scholar of the law, he approaches Jesus as though he's asking Jesus to settle a bet, right? Who's my neighbor? Probably expects him to say, you know, A or B. And of course, Jesus, ever full of surprises, answers in the last way that anybody ever would have expected. He tells this magnificent parable of a man who's walking the Jericho Road. Now that one deserves a little bit of background. Someday, if you haven't already, someday you might get a chance to go visit the Holy Land, and if you ever do, there's a good chance that you will drive the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. And if you do, remember somebody once told you that that road was paved in 1964, great, big, wide, modern highway in preparation for the visit of Pope Paul VI to the Holy Land. When Jesus tells this parable, that's not the Jericho Road he's talking about. I've led lots of pilgrimages, you know, here and there, to the Holy Land, and one time we paid our guide to take us off the beaten path and show us the original Jericho Road from the Bible. Part of that road still stands to this day. And when we saw that road, this whole parable came alive. Because we realized why that road was so dangerous, why anyone who walked that road was in danger of a robber. It's because the path from Jerusalem to Jericho gains an elevation of 3,500 feet in a very short span of distance, which means the road is filled with switchbacks. Picture this. On one side of you, a cliff. On the other side of you, a ravine. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Perfect place for a crime. They say that as late as the 1930s, people would pay guards to accompany them along the Jericho Road just so they wouldn't fall victim to robbers. Nobody walked the Jericho Road alone. They always walked it in groups for their own safety's sake. So here's Jesus. He tells a story that says, once upon a time, a man was walking the Jericho Road. Well, everybody knows what's going to happen next. He's going to be the victim of a crime. And lo and behold, he's the victim of a crime. Then along come 3 people. 2 good guys and 1 bad guy. A priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. The priest and the Levite, they're the good guys. But just in case you don't know what a Levite is basically an assistant to a priest. You can actually think of a Levite as almost being like a deacon. And these are supposed to be the good guys. These are supposed to be the men of God, right? When they come across this poor man left for dead on the Jericho Road, do they help the poor man? No. They walk around the other side, pretend like he's not even there. Why didn't they help the poor man on the road? Well, there's a couple reasons why. First is they were watching out for their own safety. Nobody wanted to stop on the Jericho Road. They were afraid maybe they themselves would become the next victim. So they just kept on walking. But the second reason why they didn't stop to help the poor man on the Jericho Road is by far the more likely reason. And it has to do with a little something called ritual impurity. You see, in Israel, the priests and the Levites would go up to Jerusalem to offer incense in the temple. It was an honor so rare that it was possible for you to go your entire life and never be asked to offer incense in the Jerusalem temple. Opportunity of a lifetime. But if you came into contact with a dead body, or an open wound, or a flow of blood, or anything of that sort, you were ritually impure for 7 days. Opportunity of a lifetime, gone. So what did they do? Played it safe. Walked around as far away as they possibly could. Then along comes a Samaritan, and this is clearly the bad guy. Y'all might have heard that Jews and Samaritans hated each other, but did you know that it was an ethnic hatred that dated back 600 years? Now, I don't know of any modern parallel of a hatred like that. 600 years is a very, very long time. They wouldn't walk into each other's territory. Each considered the other to be cursed by God. So clearly when the Samaritan shows up in the story, well, yes, the priest and the Levite ignored him. The Samaritan is probably going to rifle through his pockets and steal his shekels, right? But surprise, surprise, it's the Samaritan who shows the man kindness. Pours wine and oil on his wounds. Wine as a disinfectant, oil to soothe the pain. Hoists the man onto his own animal, takes him to the Holiday Inn, and leaves the credit card. If there's any more charges, I'll be back tomorrow to sign for it. Jesus turns to the scholar on the law and he says, which of these three men was neighbor to the robber's victim? He can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan, so he says, the one who treated him with mercy. And Jesus says, okay then, go and do the same. Now, question for you here this evening. Is there anybody in this world who you would help under similar circumstances? Is there anybody in this world who you would help on your own time, on your own dime, at your own risk, and worst of all, knowing full well that they got themselves in trouble by their own stupid recklessness? Anybody you'd help? Answer, yes. You'd help family, wouldn't you? You'd help your dear friends, or to put it briefly, you'd help anybody at all who you loved very, very much. Now, can you see how high is the bar, how high is the standard that Jesus asks his followers to live up to? The reason why this parable matters so much is because the question that launched the parable is the same question that's on your minds right now. You're sitting there in the pews and you're thinking this very same thing. Okay, fine and well, but what do I have to do? I mean, specifically, what does God expect of me to do? I mean, aren't there government programs that take care of people like this? You know, I support those programs. I pay my taxes. Doesn't that get me off the hook? And I give money to charity. I even sign the check myself. Isn't that good enough? Is there something, you know, like I actually have to do and get my hands dirty? What do I actually have to do about this? Let me give you an answer here this evening that you can put into practice today. And it goes like this. It is extremely unlikely that you will ever come across a poor man left on the side of the road for dead, or a poor homeless beggar freezing to death on the street corner in New York City. However, the kind of person who would stop and help a person under those circumstances is the same kind of person who's in the habit of lending a helping hand all across his life. Faithful in small things, faithful in big things. And the kind of person who would walk around and ignore him and pretend like he's not even there is the same kind of person who will not lend a helping hand even to small things in his life. Dishwasher's full, somebody else will empty that. Trash needs to be taken out. Oh, somebody else will do that. Unfaithful in small things, unfaithful in great things. It becomes a habit. It's amazing how some people will flatter themselves in their mind with grandiose, unrealistic works of charity when they won't do the very real small things that are right under their nose. Don't let it happen to you. Jesus once said, "Blessed are those who show mercy. Mercy shall be theirs." And I've said to you this before, that's your ticket to heaven. You know how you're going to get into heaven? One reason only. God's going to be merciful to you. And he tells you, "You want me to be merciful to you? You be merciful to others all around you." And you stop and you say, "Well, how do I do that?" Would you believe that your ancestors centuries and centuries ago in the Christian faith have already answered this question for you? Because people have been asking for years, what does it mean to be merciful? And you know what they did? They went through the scriptures and they came up with two lists of things you can do today to show mercy to those in need. Most of you have probably already heard of these lists. They're known as the 7 corporal and the 7 spiritual works of mercy. You ever heard of a bucket list? It's this idea that there's this list of things you want to do before you kick the bucket. I hate the phrase because it makes it sound like, you know, life is something you got to squeeze every last drop out of it before you breathe your last and cool down to nothing like an ember before you rejoin the stuff of the cosmos. And it all sounds so nihilistic. But you want a bucket list for life? I'll give you 2 of them. Don't leave this world without doing each one of the things on these lists. You ready? The corporal works of mercy. Feed the hungry. It's not enough to write a check. Actually, do it yourself. Hand food to somebody who's in need. Give drink to the thirsty. Clothe the naked. I knew a priest once walking down through downtown D.C., saw a poor man in the winter without a coat, took his own coat off his back, gave it to the poor man, and he walked away without a coat on his back. That's mercy. Shelter the homeless. Visit the sick. Visit the imprisoned. Now, this one's probably the hardest of all. You probably need to do that through a parish program or something like that. And lastly, bury the dead. Corporal works of mercy means ones you work on with your own hands. But that's not all. There's also the spiritual works of mercy. And they are as follows. Instruct the ignorant. Don't look now. They're all over the place, right? Counsel the doubtful. Admonish sinners. Don't tell somebody who's living in serious sin that what you're doing is just fine. Have the conversation that you don't want to have. You don't want to say it. They don't want to hear it. But you tell them anyway because it's tough love. What you're doing is wrong. That's not hate. That's mercy. Love's other name. Forgive injuries. Bear wrongs patiently. Comfort the afflicted. Pray for the living and the dead. Who is my neighbor? Open up your eyes and see. It's like what we said in the first reading. This commandment isn't so mysterious and so remote for you. It's not up in the sky that you'd say, "Who's going to go up into the sky and get it for me?" And it's not across the sea that you should say, "Who's going to cross the sea and get it for me?" No. It's very clear. It's in your mouth and it's in your heart. You only have to carry it out. That's what it means to love your neighbor. And what Jesus said to the scholar of the law, he says now to you and to me, go now and do the same. Amen.